All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Holocult. You know what that means. It's the beginning of the work week, and you've chosen us to hang out with you to get that started. If you're new here and you don't want to listen to us chit-chat for a couple minutes, you're going to want to fast forward to probably about the five-minute mark when we get into the crux of the show. But if you like listening to us talk and get through all the business, just hang out with us. Just hang out. It's awesome. We're going to start the show out on a somber note today. By the time this drops, it'll have been a few weeks, but we lost a very prominent OG member of the Holocult this week, and that's our friend and brother Maynard. If you've ever hung out with us in the YouTube Live or in the Discord, he was always around, always had very insightful conversation, and was a very big part of the community. So that loss hit us extra hard, and our thoughts and hearts and prayers go out to Maynard and his family, and it was cool knowing you, brother.
I couldn't agree more. That was probably the best way to word that. I just hope that wherever you are, you're out there chasing Bigfoot and living the dream, man.
Yes, yes.
Hopefully you still get to tune in once in a while. But regardless, I hope that you're doing great.
Yeah, that was a hard hit for the Holocult. Yeah. And it sucks. But I hope wherever you're at, you're not in pain, and you're just chilling, and you got to see a whole herd of Squatch on your way to wherever you're at, brother. But yeah, by the time this drops, it'll have already happened. But I think our next night shift, which will have been a couple weeks ago, we're gonna kind of do in the name of Maynard, and hopefully we get a bunch of people to call in and talk about some Squatches and some weird stuff. It's just gonna be primarily open lines, and we just want to hear some weird stuff for a fallen brother. So hope you guys got to hang out for that. All right. On to the business. Check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast and you'll find us there. You can also watch us on YouTube. If you do watch us over there, be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and share the show with a couple of your friends. Kind of get the word out there. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to have featured on a listener experience show, Kyle's got some details for you.
I do. It's easy peasy. It's always in the show notes. But if you have a great memory and can remember HollowSkyPodcast@gmail.com, then all you got to do is write your story out. send it over to that email. We're going to file it and air it. It's easy, not hard.
It's what we do. If you'd like to support the show, there's plenty of ways you can do it. We have a Patreon. Go over there and peep that for $7, mere $7 a month. That's, like I said, less than a value meal at a fast food chain. So this is hollow value. You get all kinds of cool stuff over there. Extra episodes, early episodes, ad-free episodes. You get casket breath jams. You get like first dibs on merch drops sometimes. There's coupons, all kinds of stuff over there. So go check that out. You can also share the show word of mouth. Big thing you got going on there. Keep our name in the hat. If you've got other paranormal podcasts you like to listen to, be sure to toss our name to them so we can collab. We also have a merch store. You can go to hollowskypodcast.com. Check that out. We got t-shirts. We're running through some backstock right now. Got some hats. Got some hoodies. Not hoodies. What do you wear on your head?
Beanies. Stocking caps.
I tricked you guys. Got excited, didn't you, when I said hoodies? I'm wearing a hoodie right now. But, yeah. Beanies. All kinds of stuff over there. Stickers. You can check it out. Rep the Hollow Cult. Wear some cool swag. It's a good time. Also, go to wherever you listen to the show and leave us a 5-star rating and review. I'll find it and I'll gladly shout you out. If you listen on Apple, that's primarily where I find mine. So you can drop ratings and reviews there. But if you listen on Spotify, feel free to pop in there and comment on the show. That helps push it through the algorithm, builds a little bit of community over there. Nah, we always have room to grow in every aspect, but especially on Spotify. So definitely do that. If I find your rating and review, I'll gladly shout you out. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our friend DH28451. DH says, love these guys, 5 stars. These guys keep it real, no pandering to a specific group. They call it how they see it, very refreshing. Peace sign emoji. Well, DH, thanks for the kind words, first off, and the 5 stars. And I like to think we do keep it real. As real as we can, which is sometimes is all we can do because we don't know how real it is.
Yeah, that's what we're here for, regardless.
Yeah, we try to keep it that way, as real as possible.
Yeah, this is who we are.
The realist, technically.
I couldn't agree more.
But again, thanks, DH, for taking the time to leave us some good news, and we appreciate you. Keep them coming. We passed the 1,000 mark. We're just steady growing. That being said, we are going to jump into it today. I have another human-esque kind of Scooby-Doo kind of mystery that I've kind of been sprinkling throughout in 2025. It's not necessarily paranormal, but it is weird and mysterious. So we got one going to drop this week, not this week, but 2 weeks ago. See how it does. And I might just start sprinkling these in here because they are weird, even if they don't have a paranormal aspect. Because like I was talking to Kyle, like Unsolved Mysteries kind of had that vibe to it where you have human mysteries and you'd also have UFOs and ghosts and stuff like that. And it was kind of a cool balance. We're going to try that. That being said, today we are going to talk about the disappearance of David Glenn Lewis. So on January 31st, 1993, Texas attorney David Glenn Lewis, 39, planned to watch the Super Bowl at home. His wife and his daughter were away on a shopping trip. When they returned that Sunday evening, they found sandwiches in the refrigerator, laundry in the washing machine, David's watch and wedding ring on the counter, but David himself was missing. There's two different mysteries that are happening at this time. The following night, across the country in Moxie, Washington, there was a man who was hit or a victim of a hit and run accident. And these two stories wouldn't cross until 11 years later. We're going to get to that. So first, we're going to talk about David. David Glenn Lewis was born on December 11th, 1953 in Borger, Texas, to parents William and Esther. He graduated magna cum laude from Texas Tech University in 1975 with a political science degree. He went on to obtain his juris doctor degree from the same university in 79. In 1986, he was elected judge of Moore County Court Court at Law, a job he would leave just 4 years later to run for district court judge of the 69th district. David's election bid was unsuccessful, and he soon went back to working at a private law practice. David was described by friends and family as being a kind person who was enjoyable. He liked helping others. He was active in several different charity organizations as well as his local church. It should also be noted that he taught a government class at a nearby college in Amarillo, Texas. So we're going to fast forward to 1993. On January 28th of that year, David left work at the Buckner, Laura, and Swindle law practice, stating that he wasn't feeling well. So he left at lunch, said he was going to go home because he wasn't feeling hot. Further investigation, his credit card showed that he did make a charge at a gas station later that afternoon. David also reportedly was feeling good enough to teach his class at a nearby college at 10 p.m. that night. The following day, Karen and Laura, his wife and daughter, left to spend the weekend shopping in Dallas, 400 miles away. They didn't see David when they were leaving. They didn't find that especially concerning because he was always out doing stuff, doing the charitable stuff and whatnot. They already knew he wanted to stay home that weekend because his favorite football team, the Cowboys, would be playing in the Super Bowl. And David was eager to watch the game. He'd been talking about it. He was excited about it. Was going to record it. Just stoked that his team was in the big game, which it's like everybody can relate to that, that like sports, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So he had this whole weekend planned out. It was kind of working out nicely because, you know, the girls are out of the house. He's just going to chill, eat some food. But something kind of didn't pan out the way that they had planned. Because during that weekend, David's behavior apparently started to take a turn toward some weird stuff going on. First, he was spotted by a friend at the of his church frantically rushing through the Southwest Airlines terminal at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. David didn't appear to have any luggage with him, so they thought that that was rather strange. It's also noted that on Sunday of the week that weekend, David's red Ford Explorer was seen parked outside the Potter County Courthouse where he worked. A deputy sheriff witnessed a man matching David's description taking pictures of the vehicle, which obviously rang a little weird with the sheriff, but he wasn't breaking any law, so the cop didn't stop him. It is to be noted that it did match David's description, and the Explorer matched David's Explorer. David returned home at some point that night, evidently, because neighbor reported seeing the vehicle parked in the driveway earlier that weekend. However, when Karen and their daughter Lauren arrived home on Sunday at 11:30 p.m., David was nowhere to be found. They did find his wedding ring and his watch on the counter. There was a load of laundry that had just finished drying in the dryer. The lights and the television were on, and the VCR was still recording the football game. There were two turkey sandwiches that were made in the refrigerator, presumably by David, for the game. The only thing that was missing was David himself. At first, this didn't really stand out as anything crazy. Karen assumed he'd simply gone to watch the game in like a friend's house and he'd be back. But when she learned the following day that David had missed two appointments during that weekend, which was very out of character for him, she became worried and notified the police that he was missing. Early into the investigation, David Glenn Lewis's of his disappearance, police learned that someone using his name had purchased two plane tickets before he went missing. The first ticket was bought on January 31st and was from Dallas back to Amarillo. So he lived in Amarillo. Somebody had to be in Dallas and purchase tickets in his name. So at that point, this was pre-9/11, so in 1993, you could purchase a plane ticket under any name you wanted. You didn't have to have, like, ID or anything. So it was just linked to the name David Glenn Lewis. which is strange since his wife and daughter were in Dallas at the time. The second ticket was purchased the next day, and this one would take him from Los Angeles back to Dallas.
To Dallas or Amarillo?
To Dallas, which is strange in itself.
That's weird.
And I assume you can purchase, like, obviously you can purchase a ticket not having to be in the city, but why would he purchase a ticket from Los Angeles to Dallas if he's not in Los Angeles, unless he was buying it for someone else? So they can't prove that he was the one that specifically bought the ticket. Again, I noted no one could explain why David were to buy those tickets, and since U.S. airports didn't require a person to show their ID before boarding a plane in 93, it could not be verified that David was the person who actually purchased the tickets.
And there's no, like, CCTV footage or anything like that?
Not that I had found in the research. And I feel like they probably would have. The investigation is strained at this point, because essentially you just have a man missing. There's nothing to make you think any kind of crime had taken place. So
I don't know about that. I feel slightly outside of that personally, because
it feels weird, right?
Yeah. And what do you do for a living again?
He was an attorney.
That's okay. That's what I thought. So you could suggest that maybe, what kind of attorney was he?
I'm not sure, but it comes into play later, because he was in the middle of a big to do with his whole attorney group, and there was like all these weird charges filed, and he was being depositioned in Dallas to come out against all this fraud that his attorney partners was doing. Like up to the point of, like, there was $3 million in fraud going on. So that's pretty big amount of money, and it's kind of substantial to the story.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, a criminal investigation goes, there's no outward evidence that anybody caused any harm to him. So at this point, it's not being treated like a criminal investigation.
And at this point, they also, did they know about the deposition of all the fraud?
His wife kind of did, but, like, the police didn't, because they haven't dug into it that deep yet.
Gotcha. So, because I was going to say, with that on board, right. There's definitely motive for somebody to hurt him. If he's going to be depositioned to snark, that's more than enough motive. But I don't know. The thing that strikes you as strange, because I'm also trying to run the events of the cop investigating the case with the claim of no criminal activities taking place. It's weird that his ring and stuff is on the counter. That's strange, but not impossible, because dudes forget that shit all the time, right? The thing that kind of fucks me up is how the laundry is just getting done.
Yeah. Yeah. And
because that puts him
At home,
MIA, within no more than probably a 40-minute time span.
That's a good catch, because I'll kind of talking to something else.
Also. And the sandwiches too, like the sandwiches come into play, because, in my opinion, dudes are kind of procrastinators, and we do that shit like last minute, like, oh shit, the game's getting ready to come on. I'm going to make these real quick, pop them in the fridge, then I'm going to go start the laundry right fast, and then I'm going to go back to the game.
Yep. It's almost something like we've all done.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
So it should be noted that technically the ticket from Dallas back to Amarillo could be for his deposition flight back. The Los Angeles one is out of hand, because nobody can figure out any ties he has or had to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I didn't know if maybe he was working on a case that required discretion, and he didn't want anyone to know who he's moving across the country.
It could
clearly suggest that somebody not him is coming from these cities too closer to him.
Yeah. Which does kind of make sense that nobody really pointed out, since the deposition was in Dallas. The flight from Los Angeles to Dallas could be somebody else brought in for the deposition, but that shouldn't have been on David to have to make those kind of interactions.
Not unless he's trying to save his ass.
Could be.
Because that's an angle there.
Another thing that stood out strange to the deputies once they started investigating the case, because right off the rip, once Karen called and said he was missing, all they could really do is make sure that there weren't any signs of like foul play. But he's a grown ass man. If he wants to disappear from his life, there's not a whole lot that anybody can do about it.
It's kind of crazy though.
Yeah, it's
crazy that somebody can do that. I feel like, especially because if you put yourself in the shoes of a spouse, I feel like bare minimum that, yeah, you're right. You have the right to disappear. I'm not going to take that away from anybody. But bare minimum, I feel like the cops should be invested enough to be like, hey, Steve, your wife is okay. She's alive. She just wanted to get ghosted, so I don't have the authority to give you that information as to where she's at. I can tell you, though, that she is alive and safe. That's all that I can do.
That's what they're supposed to do. If they do find the person that's missing and they make contact with them and those people don't want to contact their family, all they're at discretion to say is, he's found, he's safe, he doesn't want anything to do with you.
Yeah, I feel like that's fair. I know that sucks to hear. Because we as people like explanations and closure.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you also can't take away people's rights, so on and so forth. So I do think that that should be on the block at all. A lot of times though, I feel like, not taking any shots at law enforcement, but in a lot of cases, I feel like it is an excuse where they'll just be like, hey, if they want to disappear, they disappear. Bye.
Yep.
I'm done.
You hear that a lot in missing person cases.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which it's like, it almost feels like just washing your hands of the work you have to do. You know?
That's exactly it. Because in the end of the day, like with me and my wife knows my habits. She knows what I do on a daily basis. She knows who I am. She's going to be the first person to notice something is off.
Yep.
Something is wrong. So it should be that, you know, a cop should just take my wife seriously and be like, all right, yeah, we'll, you know, maybe we won't go full fucking throttle right yet, but we'll definitely start moving some chess pieces on the board and see if we can't track them down for you. All right. We'll put stuff out there, so on and so forth.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what they were feeling, considering his watch and his wedding ring were still on the counter. They thought either it kind of went one of three different directions here, right? That he was just leisurely lounging around the house, like took a shower or whatever, left his stuff there, and then decided to go hang out with his buddies. Or
I feel like he had to make a quick run.
Or he was in that could fall into that too. He had to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Or it falls into he was taken in a super fast way to where he couldn't get his wedding ring and his watch on.
I can see that.
Or a third avenue is he wanted to leave those things behind because they're identifiable markers of him.
Okay, yeah.
So he leaves this stuff.
If you are running yeah, I think all three of those are fair, definitely.
And at this point, they don't know which is which.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing that stood out was another detail that came to light as they were doing their investigation were that $5,000 were deposited into the Lewis's family bank account on the 30th. Which is that weekend. Unfortunately, they couldn't track to determine who made the deposit.
That's not a good look.
No. So, in 93, $5,000 is a lot of money.
That's not a good look.
So, could it be hush money?
That's not a good look.
Could it, you know? Just putting it out there.
Not a good look. And yeah, like, and it's hard to like argue right now because the cops at this point don't really know about the deposition and shit.
Yeah.
Because that's a huge factor in determining
what the fuck is going on.
Yeah, yeah. Because if they knew about this quickly, I feel like attention to detail and everything would be significantly heightened.
Yeah.
Because a deposition in regards to over $3 million fraud case is kind of a big fucking deal. People are going to go to prison for that.
Yeah. $3 million is a big, big time. It's big now. Yeah. Definitely big 20 years ago.
Yeah.
30 years ago. God damn.
So that's it's a big deal.
Again, I need to point out that the last confirmed sighting of David was Thursday night at his class he taught. So there was the guy who thought he saw him at the airport, who was the church friend.
And the weirdo taking pictures.
There was the cop who saw the guy taking pictures of the red Explorer.
Which wasn't him at all, right?
We can't prove that.
Okay.
The cop said the man resembled David. So we're going to go back.
Why the fuck would he be taking pictures of his own vehicle?
We don't know. We're going to go back to that right now. So a deputy reported seeing a man resembling David outside of the courthouse where David worked. The man was taking pictures of a red Ford Explorer, which piqued his attention. But again, he wasn't breaking any laws, so he didn't confront the man. This came to be a point of contention because that Ford Explorer was actually David's parked at the courthouse.
And the guy knew it was David's.
The cop?
Yeah.
No, it was just a red Ford Explorer.
Oh, okay. Because I was under the impression that he knew David.
No.
And knew that. Because it was me. I'm like, what are you talking about? He wouldn't break. Motherfucker, I'm going to drive over there and be like, wait, well, you know.
It all came
at
back.
At least drive by.
Once they realized David was missing, the cop was like, oh, shit. I saw a man
looking
like him taking pictures of a car that looks like his. Well, after he's reported missing, they start putting the pieces together. Turns out it is actually David's Explorer parked at the courthouse. They open the Explorer. They find his keys under the floor mat. His driver's license, his credit cards, and his checkbook are all inside as well. Which that initially sits pretty bad with Karen because all of his identifying documents and stuff are accounted for now. His driver's license, his credit cards, his checkbook.
Run the timeline again. When was the Explorer spotted at the courthouse?
That's where they initially found it. And the cop saw the guy taking pictures the morning of the 1st. So the timeline is Thursday, he goes home from work early, sick.
But he still does his class.
Does his class. Friday, Karen and the daughter leave, but they don't see David there that morning.
Right.
So Saturday, they see the guy scurrying around the airport.
Gotcha.
Then Sunday, Karen comes home. David's not there, but the sandwiches are there, the ring's there, the watch is there, the laundry's laundry's in the dryer.
And no neighbors were able to see his
neighbor
vehicle?
Confirmed his vehicle was there Sunday night.
Sunday
night, yeah. Or
Saturday night.
Okay. Yeah. Saturday, the 31st, whatever the fuck the 31st is.
Yeah, that's where I was getting
so
confused.
It was there the night before it was seen at the courthouse.
Okay.
Yeah. So somebody had it at the house and then at the courthouse within 12 hours. So right now you have everything that can identify David is accounted for except for David.
Which that also isn't a good look because right now it kind of feels like he's trying to cut tail and run.
Bingo.
Because if you leave all your identifying markers in your vehicle.
That's sus.
To be found. That's sus. That's suspect.
Especially leaving it at your place of employment where you know it's going to be found. Because that's if you're not at home, the first place people are going to start looking for you is at your workspace.
Yeah. And talking to your work people.
Yep. In an interview, they were talking to Karen, and she said the only thing missing that she could note missing from the house outside of David was a pair of green sweatpants that he wore. She said, which if he were to have been just leisurely hanging out, doing laundry, took a shower. She said he probably would have put on his green sweatpants. They're like his chill pants, you know?
Yeah,
like
everybody, we all got him.
We all got him to watch football or whatever. It also came forward later that on February 1st, a cab driver in Dallas, Fort Worth, picked up a man from a hotel resembling David and drove him to the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. The man in question appeared to be nervous, paid completely in cash with a wad of $100 bills he had with him. So with that information, if that was David, which we cannot confirm that that was David at the airport, and we cannot confirm that that was David taking pictures of his Explorer. Mm-hmm. These are just people that thought that they saw David.
Same with the cab driver, right?
Yes.
He doesn't say if that is David. Well, now I don't feel like, I feel like he's running for a reason.
Yeah.
Because even if you're cutting bait, you're cutting and running on your family, you're not going to be nervous.
No.
Because...
you're trying to do, you're just, you're out at that point.
Yeah, like you're not nervous about it.
And to fly, and to be in the location where you know your wife and child are.
Also doesn't seem very intelligent.
No, unless you're there to, unless you're watching them to make sure they're okay. Or like one last goodbye, like you want to just see them off without them knowing or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if that was David, you'd have to assume that he stayed the night in Dallas, Fort Worth, to be picked up that morning to be drove to the airport.
Yeah.
Which fucks the timeline up if he stayed at the hotel.
Right.
Because someone had to drive his, not only drive his Explorer to the courthouse, someone had to be in the house Sunday to start the laundry.
Yeah.
And record the Super Bowl. Because Karen said when she got home, the VHS tape was still recording. So Nexpo did an awesome deep dive on this. Go to his YouTube channel, Nexpo, YouTube/Nexpo, whatever. But he dove into the average VHS recording time on tapes in 1993. Most of them don't last more than 4 hours. So somebody would have been at the house within 4 hours of Karen returning at 11:40. And then he would have had to get 400 miles to Fort Worth, Dallas, to stay at the hotel, to be picked up by the cab, to get to the airport.
Well, I'd argue it'd be less time than that because you got the laundry that's running. There's no way it's running more than an hour. Yeah,
that's true too. That's true too.
There's no way it runs more than an hour.
Is the timeline makes it so much worse.
Yeah, you can't. The 400 miles, you're...
That's a trek.
It's a drive.
So outside of these few sightings, there were no other sightings of David reported in the Amarillo or Dallas area after this. David's family couldn't get on board that he had left voluntarily. They tended to lean to foul play, like he was abducted. Karen said that David had confided in her that he had been receiving death threats in the past while he was working as a judge, and he had begun to receive death threats again shortly before he vanished. She said that David had told her that he believed he was in danger and could possibly be a victim of future foul play, but he didn't go into specifics of those dangers because he didn't want her to worry or get deeper involved than she needed to be.
Which in that line of work is always a possibility.
Yeah, especially when dealing with big money
stuff. A judge
and or
attorney.
She said she didn't believe it was a suicide scenario because David had been really looking forward to future events, like their daughter's upcoming birthday party that he was planning and wanted to be a part of. David's friends also echoed these sentiments, stating that he was talking about future career possibilities and seemed content with his life in general. He also was still actively involved in his community, charitable organizations, and his church. So it's not like... In theory, it's not the attitude of someone that would be planning to take their own life.
Yeah, you know? I mean,
you can't really like peg that in any certain way. But essentially, having future plans kind of leans against that.
I agree. I mean, and men do carry a lot of mental burdens quietly.
Yeah,
but I'm still in this. I'm with everybody else. It doesn't sound like this dude's ready to cash out.
Mm-mm.
I don't feel like that's the case.
Oh, you ain't going to make turkey sandwiches before you go, you wouldn't think.
Well, you ain't going to leave your...
I'm going to eat them.
All your shit in your car either.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like those scenarios are far more overcomplicated than they need to be.
Yeah. Hey, Holocult. We are back and we are excited to announce our continued partnership with ZocDoc. Have you ever been to a dentist who just wants to chat to you while he's got his hand stuck in your mouth? Or a dermatologist who brings up your cosmetic issues before you do? Oof. Well, I'm here to tell you that you don't have to settle anymore when it comes to finding the right doctor. With ZocDoc, you've got options. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. We're talking about booking in-network appointments with more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty, from mental health to dental health, primary care to urgent care, and more. Once you find the right doctor, you can see their actual appointment openings and choose a time slot that works for you and your family, and then click to instantly book that visit. I haven't needed to actually book a doctor's appointment, thankfully, but I have gotten on the app and booked some mock appointments, and it is so easy. Believe me when I say it's a one-stop shop. You can get in there and search up your insurance to see who's got you covered. You can search up your ailments for specialists from cosmetic issues, dermatology issues, all across the board. And you can even book appointments that's within the next 24 to 48 hours. It is really, really nice. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/HOLO1 to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/HOLO1. ZocDoc.com/HOLO1. Hey, Holocult. Do you remember a time where if you wanted weed, you had to meet up with some sketchy dude behind the dumpster in a Denny's parking lot? Well, you don't have to do that anymore, because you can get federally legal THC shipped right to your front door. How can you get that done? With Mood. Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC right to your door. And you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com/HOLO and enter coupon code HOLO. I'm talking high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. Every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code HOLO. So head over to mood.com/HOLO, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use coupon code HOLO when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
And again, as stated, it is possible that he had some shit going on that he hadn't shared with anybody. At the time he went missing, David was a defendant in a conflict of interest lawsuit that had been brought against him and several other attorneys from his law firm, Ham, Irwin, Graham, and Cox, as well as a former client. This was the big $3 million thing that was going on. He was the last person who was going to be deposed before he disappeared. Also noted...
Hang on one second. Was he suspected in the fraud?
As a defendant, it almost feels like maybe.
Because...
Could be.
Game plan in this. If he took place in the fraud, he knows he's guilty of the fraud just like his other buddies are. Or whatever the case may be. If he's got a guilty hand in it, what happens? Because I'm not in law. What happens if he does pass away?
Oh, I don't know.
Because say he took part in fraud. He paid for the house, the cars, and all that shit with fraud money. What becomes of that if he is dead or disappears, even fakes it?
I don't know if it falls on. I don't know if it falls on next of kin or not.
Because that's motive right there
to disappear.
To A, disappear, or even the embarrassment to self-delete at that point. Some men will carry that burden and go ahead, instead of being there and called out.
It is a bit. It is a thing. Also, this is gonna just keep gonna add fuel to your fire here, Kyle. He was the last person that was gonna be deposed before he vanished. Mm. All of his paperwork relating to the case disappeared along with him and has never been found. The one of the sources I was referring to said it's unclear if this is relevant to this disappearance or not. But I feel like
it's 100% relevant. Probably
pretty fucking relevant.
Not to mention it narrows the scope of it, in my opinion. Now it makes it about this case. Yeah. Whatever he's being depositioned for, in my opinion, directly has something to do with him disappearing. Mm.
It's weird. 1 week after he went missing, he was scheduled to fly to Dallas for that deposition. Determined to find out his firm of their misdoings. His dad went on record later when he was interviewed and said that David was adamant about stating that he was, quote, "I'm going to tell the truth, whoever it hurts." So maybe David was coming forward to put that his firm was up to a lot of no good.
Which has still put him on a list of being cut down.
Yeah. Karen refused to take a polygraph test when she was being interviewed, which, again, polygraphs aren't.
Why would they want to polygraph her?
Was she under suspicion of helping
him disappear?
Being the spouse in a missing person case, I think you're immediately a number one suspect.
Which is crazy.
So they're just going to be like, hey, can you take this polygraph test to clear yourself? But polygraphs are not court admissible or reliable. So she was like, no. And then that kind of pointed more fingers toward her that maybe she had something to do with his disappearance, be foul play or not. Maybe she helped cover these things up because they're just going by her word of mouth.
Like, that is a good wife, though.
Yeah, if she's 10 toes down, she could have been the one that drove to the courthouse, left his stuff there, because you're only going by what she has to say, because she's the one that told them when she got home. Ooh. That
the plot thickens, yeah. Steve. Now my brain.
That the video was runs. Still video was still recording, or that the turkey sandwiches were in the
because fridge. What if in the end? No. Because I get the cheat because I kind of know what happens later on. But there is a thought in your head that is like, what if he was facing death threats from this truth-telling thing? And instead of finally going through with it, he's like, hey, babe, like, I got to get out of here. I'm in a lot of danger. And so they're like, all right, we're going to fake you disappearing or dying or whatever the case may be. You're going to move to so-and-so. I'm going to stick back, play it all off.
Yep.
That you're gone.
It's happened before.
And then later on in life, me and the kids will pack up because we can't take it here anymore. It's just, the memories are just too hard. I gotta get a fresh start. And then she just so happens to move where you move.
Yep. There was a case in France, I think, where a man died. The woman got all of his life insurance. His wife got all of his life insurance payout and everything. And then 15 years later, their neighbor saw the old boy working out in their yard of the house they were at. And he's like, I thought you were dead. And dude's like, nah, I'm good. So immediately, insurance fraud investigation, the couple had built an inner room in their house that old boy lived in anytime anybody ever came over.
After something like that, why wouldn't you pack up and move somewhere else?
I don't know. You got extra money.
Like, why would you?
I feel like after 15 years, you kind of get like a false sense of security. You're like, yeah, these idiots ain't know nothing. So he just goes out and he's like planting in his garden and shit. So stranger things have happened.
Right.
Ultimately, authorities believe that David left Amarillo on his own free will and they couldn't find any evidence of foul play. So they closed the case in 2002.
To me, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's no evidence of circumstantial susness going on for them to just be like, nah, he's good.
That should be a coined cop term, what you just said. Circumstantial susness.
Yeah, I think it is. If it's not, it's going to be.
That's what I'm saying. That's a perfect way of describing it. We need more cops that think like that. Like, hey, There's definitely shit not right here.
So they completely closed his case in 2002, saying that he just disappeared on his own. Mystery number one. Now we're getting ready to dive into mystery number two. The Moxie John Doe. So keep these timelines in congruency here. On the night of February 1st, 1993, motorists witnessed a man walking down the middle lane of State Route 24 in Moxie, Washington, east of Yakima. The man was wearing military fatigues and work boots. He didn't appear to have anything else on him. A concerned driver passed the man walking down the center lane. She saw him and was like, okay, that's weird. I'm going to turn around and make sure this man is okay. As she's coming back, she sees a Camaro heading the direction she just came from. By the time she got back to help the guy, he was laying dead by the side of the road, a victim of an apparent hit and run. Again, a Chevy Camaro was seen driving away, but the driver has never been identified, and it's unknown if the Camaro was responsible for hitting the man. Autopsy reports concluded that the man had died from injuries consistent with having been struck by a vehicle. Additionally, there were no drugs or alcohol in his system, and his time of death, according to the coroner, was 10:24 p.m. The deceased, who had no ID, would be classified as John Doe, and he remained that for 11 years. In 2003, Seattle Post-Intelligencer published an investigative series titled Without a Trace, which pointed out a number of problems with how adult missing person cases were being handled, which is exactly what Kyle was just talking about. You know, how with like a lot of shit gets swept under the rug because adults can go missing. It's not a crime.
Yeah.
Specifically, how many investigations, quote, slip through the cracks of the National Crime Information Center. Washington State Patrol detective in Yakima, Pat Dutter, read the series of reports and started looking into a number of local missing person cases, as well as Jane and John Doe cases, hoping to try to kind of go through and solve these by matching cases with people who are missing on the database. When he began researching the Moxie John Doe case, he searched online for any missing men matching the description of the John Doe that was found hit on the side of the road. As he's searching throughout the countrywide missing person database, he happens to come across the photo and case of John Glenn Lewis. He noticed, or not John Glenn Lewis, David Glenn Lewis, my bad. He noticed that David looked very much like the John Doe in question. But a notable difference was that David wore glasses and that John Doe hadn't been wearing any glasses. Which, at that point, he was hit by a friggin' car.
Yeah.
So, glasses could be anywhere.
And not everybody needs them full time. No. So.
But it should be noted that David did need him full time.
Oh, okay. Okay.
His eyesight was terrible, which kudos to Dutter because he did what investigators should do and investigated and noted that Yakima County PD still had the clothes that the John Doe was wearing at the time of the accident. So Dutter goes over, looks through the clothes, finds the pair of glasses in one of the pockets of...
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, the clothes the old boy was wearing. The glasses were identical to the ones, the distinctive ones that David wore himself, which if you find pictures of David, he had some pretty big Coke bottle glasses because he couldn't see shit.
It's weird, though, that he'd be walking down the middle of the road in the middle of the night without his glasses on then if he was blind as a bat.
Bingo.
That doesn't make any sense.
Bingo. So.
And not that we ain't even get to the fucking dress yet.
We're going to tie these two together. Dutter now is like, hey, there's enough circumstantial susness here for me to get a DNA test. In 2004, 11 years later, the DNA from the Moxie John Doe that was ran over the same night he was reportedly seen at the airport in Dallas matched David Glenn Lewis. So now we know that he's not alive anymore.
Yeah.
And he wasn't alive out of the weekend that he was seen. Now we've got a lot of questions.
Also, it shouldn't be that big of a fucking deal to get a DNA test.
No.
The fact that he's like, I've got enough evidence that I should be able to get a DNA test. Bitch, you should just be able to go, hey, I just want to get a DNA test of this John Doe I've got.
They may have actually taken DNA originally from the John Doe.
One would think.
But they just didn't have anything to match it to.
Right.
Until, like, it's crazy that there's not somebody, like, actively trying to match deceased people with missing people.
Why? That makes too much sense.
True. So now we have the convoluted timeline, and we've got why in the fuck was he 1,600 miles away in Moxie, Washington, not wearing his own clothes, walking down the center lane of a 2-lane highway, not wearing his glasses that he can't see without.
Yeah. It makes zero sense.
Zero sense. So, yeah, okay. I'm going to read it how I got it written down now. So, how and why did he end up 1,600 miles away from his home in Amarillo? Why was David, who had very poor eyesight, not wearing his glasses that night at all? Why was he walking down the middle of the road? And why was he wearing military fatigues that Karen, after he was identified 11 years later, was adamant that David didn't own or wear military fatigues. He was never in the military. There was no reason for him to be dressed like that. Why was he walking down the center line of the highway? Could it have something to do with him not being able to see, which maybe he thought he was on the side of the highway. Why didn't he take his glasses out of his fucking pocket and just put them on?
It almost makes you feel like he's drugged.
That's kind of where I was going a little bit, because now nobody knows how he got from, okay, the timelines are so fucked up. So we're going to go, there was no cars confirmed found abandoned on the 2-lane highway in Moxie. So he didn't drive there and get out and walk. His car was confirmed in his driveway on the night of January 31st. Then a man seen taking pictures February 1st of the Explorer that looked like David. Not confirmed it was David, but looked like David and taking pictures of David's car. So if David was at the courthouse taking pictures of his car, the only fucking possible way he would be able to be in Washington to die is if he took a plane from Texas to Washington, because a 1600 mile drive is like 24 hours somewhere around there.
Yeah. It's a long fucking drive.
There's no way he would have made the drive. That's just not possible. There's no direct flights booked to the area of Moxie within 24 hours of when David was hit. He also has no known ties to the area. So I looked up the closest airports to where his body was found. Closest local airport is in Sunnyside, Washington, 33 miles away. So that's just local flights. That wouldn't take one from Dallas. Domestic.
What about private?
Possibly. The closest domestic airport was only 10 miles away from Yakima, which I'm assuming those two were the ones they first looked at to see if any flights were confirmed from Texas to there.
Right.
That's not saying that a private flight couldn't have flown somewhere else and then flown in there. So that was a good point.
But if you have private, I mean, that means somebody, there's a player that's heavily invested in this situation.
Big time. The closest major international airport is Seattle, Washington, which was 150 miles away. So flying in that was probably taking flights in from Dallas, but being 150 miles away, that adds way more time to what the fuck you got going on. And again, you don't know how he got out to the middle of the road.
No, because I'm trying to think. Because it is possible, depending on the players, that he chartered somebody with a private plane to take him.
Could be.
It's possible, depending on who he's trying to run from.
It very well could.
It does. I don't feel like a group of lawyers is going to go. I don't feel like they operate like the cartel, but they very well could operate like the cartel.
It also depends on what the fraud stemmed from.
Yeah.
Could they have been funneling money from bigger entities?
Yeah. Which, then you're definitely in trouble.
Yeah. Which would
also, spark I was some thinking, bad shit. not that it makes the most sense, but I was thinking in regards, maybe he thought in regards to being in this area by himself and needing to get around, maybe he wore the fatigues in hopes that he would be able to hitchhike easier.
Ooh, that makes sense.
You know what I mean? Because maybe he's trying to present himself as military.
Like would trust him.
People would trust him more.
I didn't think about that. That's good. That's a good catch.
But then you have to ask, why and how was he hitchhiking on this road?
Yeah.
And that's a far more complex.
And how he got there. That's the crazy shit. Did he walk? Like, even if it was at the domestic airport, that's still 10 miles.
Yeah.
And like, that adds a lot of time to your timeline.
You got to have an explanation for a plane. Like, somehow, some way, he had to have taken a plane, right?
And again, how did you, like, it was 1993, so CCTV footage was not a big thing then.
It wouldn't have been that great anyways.
But being in if he flew into the international airport, you would think that he would be there, or he would have been seen at the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. Something would have, but you don't even, like, you didn't have to have ID to buy tickets or to board a plane at that point. So you could essentially move around as a ghost if you wanted to.
Yeah, and he could have just bought under somebody else's name.
Yeah.
So on and so forth.
And why would he buy plane tickets back and forth to Los Angeles and Dallas from Amarillo in his name, but not buy the Washington plane tickets in his name? That's fucking weird.
It makes no sense.
None. None whatsoever.
Like I said, the best I could come up with is the fact that he's moving somebody from A to B.
Point to point. David's family and friends continue to believe that he was abducted and that he would never have chosen to leave them behind on their own. They also don't believe that he was suicidal either. Authorities, however, do believe he could have been planning on ending his own life. According to one investigator on the topic of the case, he says it has a lot of earmarkings of someone ready to take their own life. People don't always do what you expect them to do. Again, main theory is that he was involved in something that he shouldn't have been. So that takes two different routes, as Kyle was saying. Either he was himself in the fear of being exposed, or that someone was after him, getting himself out of the scenario, be it for his own safety and peace of mind, or trying to get himself away from his family, who may have also been at risk. Which, I mean, you can't really blame him for that.
No, not at all.
Or, if you're still running that note, where he left on his own, he didn't leave on his own. It's that he was taken by whatever entity that was either trying to cover up whatever he was going to expose in the deposition, which is strange. They would have to go through so many loops.
I don't feel like he was taken.
Because you would essentially have to have someone... Like, the amount that he was seen, or who they thought was him, was seen the weekend prior to his disappearing, almost feels like it was planned a little bit.
And if he was taken, like, you got to think about this. If he was taken, I feel like he was taken by, like, some type of, like, novel hitman.
Which...
You know what I mean? Because, like, I feel like if you're fucking with these types of people... They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
They're going to be brute force. Don't get me wrong. They may try to be covert about it, but I highly doubt they're going to be like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put some turkey sandwiches in the fridge. We're going to start the laundry. We also know that he's into the Super Bowl. We're going to tape the Super Bowl. All right. That's what we're going to do. And then on top of all that, we're going to take him all the way up to fucking Washington, and we're going to put him in some fatigues and set him loose on the free on the road.
Doesn't make any sense. On the first part of that, though, those could have all been steps David took because he thought he was just going to have a regular weekend, making his turkey sandwiches, planning to watch the Super Bowl. the hitman abductor could have came after those things happened.
That's true.
You know, but that still doesn't explain like the taking pictures of the car, leaving the car stash,
leaving all this shit in the car.
Exactly. All the hitman
doesn't give a shit.
No, unless it was part of some bigger like clandestine plan.
But it still doesn't make sense to fucking abduct him and then put him in military fatigues.
That's fucking true.
Because, I mean, worst case, like best case scenario, worst case, however you want to label it, they take him. They do make it look like, all right, maybe they are vested and they're like, you know what, let's make it look like he ran away. Cool. I can agree with that. However, what logical excuse can you come up with that they took him up there and put him in fatigues? The only thing that they're going to put on this motherfucker is cinder blocks and pitch him in a river somewhere.
Yep.
And then, boof, gone. That's it. End of story. No more to worry about because they've already made it look like he's run away or, I mean, you hear their theories. So the Washington aspect of this makes zero sense.
It's the worst part. Like, normally a case this convoluted and weird would have a whole string of theories, but there's so much evidence that they kind of eliminate a lot of them themselves, except for the main three.
Yeah.
Which is he was abducted. Main two, he either left on his own or he was abducted.
I still don't think he was abducted. And
the Washington aspect throws a wrench in every theory.
Yeah.
Because if he did disappear, he had no ties to Moxie. Why would you pick? I'd never even heard of Moxie, Washington. If it's Moxie County, wherever the fuck it is.
Or it'd be where you want to disappear, where somebody just
could
no
be.
Ties.
Could be.
But at the same, you know, I'm also thinking like, well, somebody could use the excuse, but maybe he was trying to change his appearance while he was there. If all he did was put on a pair of military fatigues to change his appearance, he's dumb. And take his glasses off.
Yeah.
He's dumb. Like if you were to tell me he shaved his head or dyed his hair, got a fucking tattoo, grew a mustache or shaved a mustache. Okay. Now we can entertain the idea that he's trying to change his appearance. But if all he did was put fatigues on, take his glasses off, that's not changing your appearance.
Yeah. There is kind of another avenue that people kind of low key get behind, but it kind of writes itself out, was that maybe David had some sort of mental break. All the pressure from his job, from the death threats, from the deposition caused him to just kind of snap a little bit. And a lot of people talk about like a dissociative fugue state or dissociative amnesia that caused him to forget whatever it was he was doing and end up in Washington.
Yeah, well, I think that people are really good at overcomplicating things.
100%, because if that were the case, if it was a mental break, a fugue state where you don't remember what you're doing, he went through an awful lot of steps to leave everything that I identified him in Amarillo.
Yeah,
because you gotta think this body laid buried in Washington for 11 years. If Dutter wasn't paying attention, he would still be unidentified, because the only reason anybody even re-looked into that case was because old boy just happened to be looking through that article and was like, man, we fuck up a lot of shit. Maybe somebody needs to look into it. So I don't feel like it would be that route, because he took...
I can't wrap my brain around the fatigues. I can't.
The fuck either.
Like
was he planning on hiding in the woods? Like
every other aspect of this story, I can wrap my brain around. Because I think in the end, he ran is what he did.
I do.
I think he was running from somebody.
The ending is what throws it off.
I can't decide if he was in cahoots with the wife or he was leaving to protect them.
Because you think if he were taken out, they're not going to do it that way. Take him out 1,600 miles away and then run over him with a car?
No.
In front of other people, yeah, essentially. No. Because what are the odds that he died in that hit and run when old girl turned around to come back and look for him?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people survive hit and run accidents. So I don't know, man. It's one of those.
I just can't figure out the fatigues.
Me either.
That's the one that throws me for the loop.
And that nothing else was missing from the house. All of his identification was still there in Amarillo. The fact that it was so well planned. Like, why leave your car at your place of work unless it was to buy yourself time or buy someone else time to think that, oh, his car's in the parking lot. He's probably at work.
Yeah.
I don't know.
My gut says he ran.
I'm kind of in that camp, too.
Because, being in a deposition for that amount of money and fraud, and he already knew. He knew by those statements that he was going to fucking piss people off.
Yep. I'm going to tell the truth no matter who it hurts.
Yeah.
Which he was.
And that could also be. That could also be a statement of him accepting his fate, too.
Yeah.
Like, he was involved in being like, I'm done running from this. I'm just going to tell the truth no matter what. It doesn't matter. This is what I'm doing.
And
even if it hurts my family.
All of the missing documents, all of his documents that went missing too, that, like, it's so planned out that it leans both directions so well.
Yeah. Cause that's sus.
He did
fuck.
It himself or someone else did it to him.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. It's one of those things where you have so much evidence and so much weirdness that you would think there would be a conclusion.
Yeah.
But they linked them together in 2003 or 2004 and he disappeared and died in 93 and they still are no closer to figuring out what he was doing in Washington.
And because with people, there's such a what if factor that, cause what if he runs, right? What if we're wrong? What if he changed his mind on the deposition and wanted to run and save himself or save his family, whatever the case may be. He runs. And then it's just so coincidence that the people that he was going to tattle on or whoever goes in and takes his paperwork. They're like, well, he's not going to be able to prove shit if he ain't got this. Yeah. You know what? Because that's.
It could happen.
Yes. Not saying that this is reality, but those stupid little things do happen.
Yep. And it again lines up both ways.
It does. And so it's I don't know, dude. I don't know.
It's just. Yeah. I don't either. It just seems that no theory 100% ties in to the weird chain of events that led up to his disappearance and his death.
Another stupid coincidence is, say he chartered a private plane from there to Washington and was unable to, for whatever reason, secure a ride from this little podunk ass airport to town.
So he's walking
and just
gets hit by a fucking car.
Which
again doesn't explain why he had his glasses in his pockets.
Right. Yeah. That's another oddity.
Which made me, when you said he was drugged, that could be a thing. Like, he wakes up in clothes he doesn't know he has. He doesn't have his glasses on. He's just stumbling around out in the middle of nowhere. He's not going to think to start checking pockets to see if he's got anything.
Some like novel fucking kidnappers. Like, I've got it. We're gonna put him on a private plane. We're gonna take him to the middle of BFE, drugging him and drop him off. Then, you know what? It's not that far fetched now that I think about it. Then he misses the deposition, and we're home free. No harm, no foul.
11 years later, they're like, son of a bitch,
right? Because people are that stupid. You know, if you really consider the idea that maybe they don't want to kill him, they just want him to miss the deposition and all that shit.
They didn't count on Washington Joe Dirt and his Camaro running over David.
But, and once again, I'm not saying that's the truth, but
nobody knows the truth.
And those possibilities, as far-fetched and dumb as they sound, they could very well be a possibility.
It's crazy that to this day, 30 years later, they still don't know what the fuck was going on. So that's why we talked about it today, Hollow Gold.
I hope it's just sheer, all of it is almost like sheer dumb coincidence. That's why they can't figure it out. There's so much and none of it's planned. It's just chaos that somehow, some way fits together in this unorganized way that actually makes sense, but you can't figure it out. You can't decide which road to go down.
It makes sense for every theory, but not enough sense to justify a single theory.
Yeah.
It's weird. But like that's it. What we're left with. That's what we're left with it's today. The mystery of David Glenn Lewis, the Moxie John Doe.
There's definitely a mystery to it.
I will leave you with his obituary, read in part. Quote, "Your love and devotion has been missed so very much. You touched so many lives while you were here. How sad that many of your dreams were left unfulfilled. We know that God is using you for his almighty work." So, if you guys want to further look into the case, I got some sources here that I used. Discover.hubpages.com had an article on him. Wikipedia's got a good write-up, but primarily I used other creators in the realm of YouTube, and they were Nexpo. Go check him out. If you don't know him, he's massive anyway. He had a good little episode on it. Mike from That Chapter did a episode on it. Check it out. And the one that was the deepest dive that I could find was Cadaver on YouTube. Go check him out. That was like a deep, deep dive, like 40-minute banger there. So if you're into YouTube and those creators, go and support them. Go check them out. And that's that. Another non-paranormal but mysterious mystery. If you guys like these, let us know. That way we can kind of keep them in rotation and throwing them out there. Because it's a little,
I liked it.
It's
I think
a little
it fits.
Bit different. Yeah, it's a little bit different than a paranormal aspect, but it's still weird.
Yeah, like, mysteries still fall in the
mysteries world. Mystery, right?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's, I'm with you when you think, I think it fits the genre. I don't care.
So, yeah. Anybody has any theories, throw them out to us. But that's that for this week. Hollow Cult. Hope everybody has a good one, gets through this work week. Keeping my fingers crossed that the cold weather is behind us, because it sucks. So everybody be safe. And until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird. And this one goes out to you, our fallen brother Maynard. Godspeed, my friend.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.